All right, the 5 at 5 is brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Jeff, we talked about it a little bit in hour number one, but the 2019 schedule was released today, and since I just can't find any spots on this year's schedule that really worry me all that much, how about the 2019? You've said 2019 is going to be Georgia's year, so how about the schedule? What do you think of it?
I mean, it's a bear, definitely. I think what jumps out at you is playing Missouri between Florida and Auburn, but Missouri won't have Drew Lock next year, which will help. As you pointed out, Missouri and Auburn both catch Georgia coming off an open date, so that'll be tough. But definitely what stands out to me is playing Texas A&M the week before Tech. And
yeah.
It's just, you know, you were like, when's the last time Georgia played a team of that caliber beforehand? And really, you'd have to go back to the old days when we ended every season the 11-game schedule with Florida, Auburn, and Tech. So Auburn would be the answer there. So, and that's going to be a tough one. But Georgia's going to have the better material and the better coach each and every Saturday. So I like our chances each week. And here's where this will be year four for Kirby. And really, his third full recruiting class, you know, that's where that depth is going to show.
It's funny, like, that was the really probably that as much as any game on the schedule next year, because we haven't played them yet. It's like, well, when are we going to play Texas A&M? And we're going to have to wait all the way to November 23rd to play them.
I would like, ideally, if one of the games, Murray State or Arkansas State, if we could move that to that week. And like, I'd like to play A&M the week after we go to Vandy.
Yeah.
Like, I think that'd be cool. But I know a lot of that is out of the school's control, and the conference is trying to work all this in. Plus, you got the craziness of the way the schedule fell, the way the calendar fell, of having two open dates next year.
Well, and it's good because for a while it was looking like Georgia was going to play Notre Dame and then jump right into another SEC game.
So after Notre Dame, it's an open date. Then is it South Carolina?
Then it's at Tennessee.
And then South Carolina at home and Kentucky at home, right?
Yes. And then another open date with Florida, and then you go Missouri, Auburn, Texas A&M, and Florida and Tennessee have open dates before they play Georgia, but Georgia also has open dates. It's South Carolina's got an open date. Georgia's going to be at Tennessee. Missouri's got an open date when Georgia's playing Florida. And then Auburn's got an open date when Georgia is playing Missouri. So
that's a tough stretch.
Yeah, so you got three opponents going to be off going to be off buys, but the Dogs don't have back-to-back road games next year.
Real quick, who is A&M playing when we're playing Auburn?
South Carolina, but that game's at home.
So it's in College Station?
It doesn't look like anyone's coming to Athens on back-to-back travel. So
no.
We don't have that, and you've got three opponents basically that are going to be off buys.
This could be Georgia's most challenging schedule, Chris. I'd say since 2008. Because that was a year, obviously, it was Auburn, LSU, and Alabama out of the West.
Yeah. Well, if you count, I mean, throw Vandy in there then, too, man. What does that add up to? That's six of Georgia's conference games. The team they're playing won't play anyone before. But,
yep.
I mean, three of them are washes since Georgia isn't playing anyone before them either. I guess we don't know Notre Dame's full schedule yet to see what they're up to the week before they come here.
Maybe they'll go to Ball State to return that game.
Yeah, because we'll be playing Arkansas State. They've been a solid Sun Belt Conference team. In fact, they might win the Sun Belt Conference this year, but they already got blown out by Bama a couple weeks ago.
Bama gave them a good whooping, 57-7.
Yeah, they did. Kentucky plays Arkansas the week before they come here.
Oof.
And
who's the best team in Arkansas, by the way, this year? Like, is Bama going to beat Arkansas worse than they beat Arkansas State? To go off on a tangent.
Well, here's the thing. Bama was favored by 36.5 against Arkansas State. What's going to be the number against Arkansas?
Higher than that. It's got to be.
Like, again, we're stuck with 41 with Stanford and USC. Are we going to get there?
Ever. Yeah.
But we won't have the biggest upset
no,
ever.
No, impossible.
No. I mean, there's a 0% chance that Arkansas beats Alabama.
ESPN will do those win percentage generators. I mean, that is zero.
Yeah, might as well go with zero on that one. All right, moving on, Jeff, for this weekend, SEC schedule, looking at the lineup, what is the game of greatest significance? Because we've got more intra-conference matchups. There's actually only 8 games in the league this weekend.
Yes, you got 6 SEC versus SEC intra-conference games. Obviously, the one I'm most interested in, you got a battle of unbeatens with Georgia and Missouri. I'm going to throw you another one, though, Chris. Battle of unbeatens with Kentucky and Mississippi State. And, sir, I do think the winner of that has a legitimate shot to finish in the upper half of their division. And I think if State were to win, they could say, you know what, then, hey, if we beat Florida, all of a sudden we're 5-0 with Auburn coming in. That's a top 10 season type start for Kentucky. I think if they win, they'll have a chance to maybe get to 8 and finish in the top 25.
So Mississippi State, Kentucky?
Yeah, I'm also, of course, you got Florida and Tennessee too, which that's going to be your hair trigger reaction.
I feel like that is it just because you've got 2 first-year coaches there, and it would be – it's actually probably bigger for Mullen to get off to the 1-0 start because he's actually expected to win the game, not Pruitt.
Georgia's previous 2 defensive coordinators will be squaring off.
Yeah.
And Kevin Shear, who's a fine linebackers coach here. I like Coach Shear a lot. But that's man.
There's a lot of former Georgia assistants popping up on TV. There was one last night on Monday Night Football. I noticed the Seahawks starting quarterback is already – he's already checking a lot out of a lot of the plays that get called in.
Whew. That was one Chicago fully controlled that game. When the Bears figure out how to put people away – when you called them back in August making the playoffs, and Trubisky, I know he threw a couple of picks last night, but he's playing good. I mean, the Bears are a good football team.
And Khalil Mack is playing like he's got a point to prove.
That Mack, Roquan, Leonard Floyd, and Roquan's getting more and more snaps. I mean, he'll be starting within 2 or 3 weeks.
Did he do anything last night?
He made a couple of nice tackles. I mean, but he's getting there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't play at all in the preseason.
No.
Because he was in that, that contract dispute.
But, no, they look good. That Prince Amakamura ran an interception back for a touchdown. They've got a good secondary. That Allen Robinson's a good receiver. Well, what's the back's name? Is it Jaren Howard?
Jordan Howard. Jordan,
yeah, he's a good back.
Which kind of brings me to the next topic. And you're seeing with the Bears are amongst them, what Kansas City has done. You know, for all these NFL diehards that for so long said college offenses couldn't work in the NFL, well, all these NFL teams now are adopting these kind of college offensive principles, and I think you can attribute it to Chip Kelly. And now, in the end, he ended up failing, and right now things aren't going well at UCLA, but I still think he's had an influence overall on the league. Now, so with Chip Kelly – you know, this dad, one of his quarterback's dad came out and criticized him and basically said that, well, he was just at Oregon and all his assistants were doing the heavy lifting and he was just attached to him there. But what do you make of Chip Kelly right now? Because UCLA looks terrible. They're 0-3. He was awful his last year at San Francisco. But what is suddenly his legacy as a coach? Is he a good coach, a bad coach? What is he?
I think he was an excellent coach and a great innovator. And he felt like he had to take a shot at the NFL if that's where he wanted to go. He made a playoff at 10-6. And he had another team at Philadelphia go 10-6 that didn't make the playoffs. Now, San Francisco was terrible. I don't know how much you can put on him. You know, ultimately, for his legacy, if that's what he was really concerned about, he probably should have just stayed at Oregon. I don't think they would have missed a beat, to be honest with you. So now, can he do it at UCLA? I mean, who's the last coach that consistently won at UCLA?
Consistently?
Terry Donahue.
Is that it?
You know, before Dick Vermeil left.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the easiest of jobs because you're in the same city with USC. Even Jim Moore talked about it, like the commitment from their athletics. I heard some good stories. They don't necessarily pay great. Like, remember when Moore said they don't even have a 100-yard practice field? I think they got that.
They've got like a 50-yard field or something.
Right. I think they got that alleviated. I do think Chip Kelly's a good coach. But whether he's able to rebuild UCLA, we'll see. Because, by the way, USC's not exactly looking great right now.
Well, like, when you think now, his His record that his last year at San Francisco, what did they win, like two games?
Yeah, they were like 2-14, and now he's 0-3.
Now they're 0-3, so yeah. I mean, and then his last year in Philadelphia wasn't great. He had two good years, but then his third year in Philly was pretty bad. So, I mean, yeah, you start to add it up what his record is all of a sudden, but I think it is – some of the stuff that you see going on now in the NFL, I think he's the one that influenced it.
I think when Philadelphia had those back-to-back 10-6 seasons, there were a lot of organizations that were probably afraid to do some of the quote-unquote college stuff. But I think he showed it could work. Like Nick Foles had a really good year there.
Yeah.
And I think that at the very least, if you don't want to give him credit for being a master innovator, at the very least, it kind of – pulled the curtain down on pro teams saying, well, we can't do what these teams do in college. And the other part of it, Chris, with so many college teams being based in the spread or the RPOs, whatever it may be, you've got to draft these college players, in particular the quarterbacks. So it would make sense to do something that these quarterbacks know how to do.
I think Chip Kelly is – you know, he'd be good to ask about this is Brandon Boykin if you talk to him again.
Yes,
because
–
he's, I mean, I think like, you know, Chip Kelly appears to where he's just kind of like a weird guy. I think Boykin was one who, you know, basically said like you'd pass Chip Kelly and like say something to him and he wouldn't even like look at you or acknowledge that you existed.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it was weird. And, you know, maybe that's part of his, that certainly is a problem when you're talking about coaching in the NFL you react to players. It's different in college, but, but I mean, the Bruins are,
they're
0-3 and.
Hey, I'm telling you, they could let's look and see if they've got any guaranteed W's here too, by the way.
They don't,
real quick.
Because they've played their three non-conference games and neither one of those were layups, as evidenced by the fact that they're 0-3.
I mean, I'm telling you, that game with Arizona October 20th is bad. If you had to do a college football for teams with excellent histories, bottom four teams, I mean, I'm telling you right now, UCLA, Arkansas, and Florida State are in. Like
not leaving.
No.
Yeah.
So like if the football playoff this year, if it's Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and Ohio State, the bottom four, we call the undercard playoff, UCLA, Arkansas, and Florida State are in it for sure.
So we're looking for one more?
I'll give Nebraska a pass.
Yeah, I will too. But they hadn't started 0-2 since like 1971. They were the team with the longest active streak mm-hmm. of not starting 0-2. You know who the team is now that has the longest active streak of not starting 0-2? The Gators. I think the last time they did was like at 76.
They went 0-10-1 in 79.
That's
now
the,
maybe they got a tie. Maybe that one of the first
maybe the
two was a tie.
Yeah.
But yeah, they they had a lot of streaks get broken when Muschamp was there, that 4-8 team in 13. So now Florida, they've had, what, two of the last 5 years, they've had four win seasons. But they had a long bowl streak, a long winning record streak.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so who that fourth team would be right now? And I'll even give, if Tennessee winds up struggling again, I'll give them a pass. You know, it's Pruitt's first year.
Right. Yeah, I was expecting them to only win, like, a handful of games this year and really been focusing on those last three. But
I mean, Arkansas, no brainer. UCLA, no brainer. And
yeah.
Florida State, whoo. I mean, they've got the long bowl streak.
Yeah, the Florida is the – it was Florida in 76 started actually, it was Florida now in 71 started 0-2. That's the last time they did. We can thank Tech for that not being the case in 1979 because they tied them in week two.
So talk about a hand grenade game, Tech against Florida.
So Nebraska was – I think Nebraska's streak, I guess, went back – like dated back some time. And then – so now Florida, 1971 – starting 0-2. That's the longest streak for a team not starting 0-2.
I believe – remember Nebraska had that stretch really through Solich where they had won 9 every year. I think that started in 69 because they beat us in the Sun Bowl in 69, won the back-to-back national titles in 70 and 71. So it must have been 68 was the last time Nebraska started 0-2.
Started 0-2?
Yeah.
But
golly, they did have a game weathered out in week one, Nebraska did.
Yeah. But they and they, yeah, they did lose their quarterback.
The Big 12, by the way, helmet schedule.
Yeah, they're in the pack. Or the Big Ten now.
The other big. Yeah, it was Akron. Hey, although Akron, what if Akron? They could have gotten a win over Nebraska and Northwestern.
They could have gone in there. For Nebraska, it was 57.
Whoo!
Yeah. They're 0-2 for the first time since 1957.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive stuff.
But I do give them a pass.
Yeah, it's Frost. And they, I mean, they could have beaten Colorado, and, you know, Troy's pretty good.
All right, on the opposite end of that, Jeff, we did talk about last hour. You know, how many teams do we think?
Oh, real quick, Arizona would be in that bottom four also right now. That would be my not that their history rivals those, but major schools. But anyway,
no. But to have brought back Khalil Tate,
take Arizona out. I got North Carolina.
Oh, they're horrendous.
There you go. There's your other one.
Yeah, because they're another team too, where that's like they're.
The fact that East Carolina lost to North Carolina A&T and then beat the Tar Heels, that's humiliating.
Yeah, I mean, they're like 0-11, I guess, is in play now.
It is. So Carolina would be there. I mean, Lawrence Taylor went there.
Yeah, he did. Mitch Trubisky went there.
Yeah, he did.
Starting for the Bears now. All right, so on the other end of that, we talked last hour about how many teams right now, 3 weeks into the season, that we legitimately feel like could win the national championship. To piggyback on that, how many teams do you even think could make the playoff?
Right now, SEC, Georgia, Alabama. I don't want to – I think another team from the West could potentially – I don't know who it is.
State would be my
– State or LSU. I just think Auburn's schedule's too tough. So a random third one from the SEC. If Missouri beats Georgia, who knows? But I'd say a random third – I do think the Dogs are going to win, by the way. Clemson – Virginia Tech, I think you got to give them a crack at it.
Well, I mean, because Virginia Tech's schedule looks like it could set up where they've got one game to beat Clemson for a shot to get in there, yes.
I don't think they're that good, but Notre Dame, if Notre Dame could eke a 10-2 out, you know they're in play.
All right, so we're at six.
I don't – Ohio State.
Yeah. I don't know of anyone else from the Big Ten at this
the
point.
The only other – maybe Iowa –
Maybe.
That's a stretch.
It's still, yeah.
I think Oklahoma's the only team from the Big 12.
Not even Okie State?
Do you see Oklahoma State in the playoffs?
No, but I'll say that the only game they'll be an underdog the rest of the season will be Oklahoma. Will be Bedlam, yeah.
All right, I'll give you that. That's nine. Washington, Stanford, Oregon, 12?
I don't think – I mean, I know Stanford and Oregon are undefeated right now, and they play Saturday, but I don't think either one of those teams are going to – we're going to cut it and make that. I guess Washington would still be in play if they could hang on with their that one loss to Auburn.
All right, so then that's 10, and that's counting Iowa and arguably Mississippi State and Virginia Tech, which really you're down to about 7.
Yeah, it's basically about the same number of teams that could win it all, but the only teams that could even make the playoff.
Then you start looking at it too, just Oklahoma. I mean, they're great. Their history and tradition is incredible, but. Then it's like, all right, it's Lincoln Riley without Rodney Anderson. Like, if they had to play Bama.
Yeah. And a defense that still isn't great.
No, it's not.
All right, there's today's 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.